Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and talk about them. My name is Luke Condor of K, and I'm joined by Mr.
Ben Errington.
Mr. Ben Errington, how are you doing?
Very well, Luke. How the devil are you?
Pretty good. Your beard's growing back, nice and strong.
I'm glad it is. I'd be devastated if it didn't. I think my whole identity would be in crisis if it didn't. And I might stop doing these podcasts.
Yeah, it's nice. It's
but it's back.
It's like a cottage roof. I like it.
Thank you. Yours is very cottagey also.
Yeah, mine's I need to trim it, to be honest. It's getting unruly.
Unruly.
Yeah, it's
back with you.
Okay, so last week we talked about a film. What film did we talk about?
The Blair Witch Project.
The Blair Witch Project. Yes, correct. That's trivia.
Say the Bear Witch Project?
it's a slightly different film. The Bear Witch.
I'd still watch that. Is it like a hairy, chubby homosexual man?
It's like Yogi Bear mixed with the witch.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
He sacrifices the camp kids. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. So today we're talking about If It's in a Word or It's in a Look, You Can't Get Rid of the Babadook. And Ben, what the hell's it about?
The Babadook. Well, what is it about? I mean, it's an interesting one. Oh, what the hell? So The Babadook is a 2014 Australian-Canadian psychological horror film written and directed by Jennifer Kent in her directorial debut. The film stars Essie Davis and Noah Wiseman, and it is based on the 2005 short film Monster, which was also written and directed by Jennifer Kent. It's about a single mother plagued by the violent death of her husband, who battles with her son's fear of a monster lurking in the house, but soon discovers a sinister presence all around her.
Is it Australian-Canadian?
I don't know how that marriage works, but apparently it is.
Hmm. So this is what the Empire magazine has to say about it. Slightly missold by a trailer that made it look like a standard, though impressive monster movie, The Babadook's greatest trick is not really being about the title of the thing at all. Rather, it's a film about a mentally unraveling mother's difficult relationship with a young son. The duck itself is just another spanner in the works, subverting expectations. The film seems to set up an Amblin-style hijinks from a resourceful kid, but those elements never come to pass, and his backpack of tricks is ultimately useless. The rules are right there in the creepy storybook. You can't get rid of the Babadook. The eventual solution for its defeat, but not eradication, is something like genius. So this film's got 98% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's the highest so far.
98?
You don't look impressed. You don't like you agree with the tomatoes.
That's insane. That's super fresh. That's a tomato just straight off the vine.
Yeah, straight off the vine into the gob. It's got 86% on Metacritic and 3.5 out of 4 from Mr. Ebert, which I think is the second best film from Ebert. I think we had a 4 out of 4.
Yeah, that he gave The Blair Witch 4 out of 4, didn't he?
Did it? Oh, okay, yeah.
I think he did. I think there may have been a couple of 4 out of 4s, actually.
Yeah. But 98% fresh. That's I wasn't expecting that. I mean, it's a good film, but that is good. Okay, so have you seen this film before? What are your initial thoughts?
I've never seen this film before.
I think I've been shot by that before. But you've never seen it before.
You've never bloody seen it. Jesus. I think when it came out, it was presented as like a very standard, I thought it was an American film, a very standard sort of like American horror film where a kid is plagued by some sort of unseen force or ghost. And I just didn't like the look of the trailer. It kind of looked a bit lame. So I avoided it for this whole time. And obviously it is completely different to how the trailer and the marketing, I guess, kind of portrayed it.
Yeah.
I can see
why they portrayed it in the way they did, to get bums in seats and tickets sold.
Yeah, I mean, just from looking a bit into it, I think it didn't do so well on its initial release in Australia.
Yeah.
So when it was given like a bigger release, they sort of marketed it slightly differently. So, what did you think, Luke?
Well, I mean, so I thought the same thing. I thought it was going to be like not even one of the Insidious style films, or you know, those sort of popular American horror films at the minute. I thought it was going to be, because I knew it was Australian, I thought it was going to be sort of a low budget, not a rip off, but a low budget attempt at doing what those American horror films are doing. But then, like, I think a few friends were telling me that I need to see it, it's super creepy. And I watched it back then, liked it, I didn't love it. I watched it again this time, and I think I don't think I'd love it, but I do like it more this time. Now I'm sort of looking more into it. I think there is some depth there. There's a lot more to it than those American films.
Yeah, there's way more to it. You think about every single thing that it kind of puts forward and explores, and there's a lot of is a lot deeper and a lot more intense than those films. And there's not really it is creepy, and I did find myself a little bit like, oh god, what's going to happen? I think it's because I was anticipating the type of jump scare you would get in a film like that, which it kind of felt like it was setting up a lot of the time, but it didn't really pay off on, which I kind of liked.
Yeah.
I think the scarier bits were there were some very odd moments. There was a lot of cool stuff going on in terms of like cinematography and very unique little nuances that I noticed throughout. Yeah. I don't know if I agree with the Empire guys saying that it's an Amblin like resourceful kid, because this kid is a shitbag. He can be as resourceful as he wants to be, but kids from the Amblin films, you're rooting for them and you're loving them.
Yeah.
This kid, you're like, no, mate, give it a rest. For the love of God.
There's the kid is something else.
And that's testament to him as an actor. Because throughout, I think you kind of feel sorry for him occasionally, but most of the time. I'm sure he's portrayed the way he's portrayed, so you can kind of feel like you understand the mother's anguish and the mother's grief and the mother's sense of helplessness.
Yeah,
he's portrayed as that, so you get on board with her. But my God,
they picked
my God
the kid with the whiniest. Like, he hits a certain frequency when he's like kicking the back of the driver's seat and he's screaming, squealing. There is something I don't want to say. Like, you never want to say you want to punch a kid in the face, because it's wrong to say it, obviously. But I'm pretty sure that's probably what they were going for. I mean, I think you kind of supposed to put in the mother's shoes, but I really do want to punch that kid in the face.
If it was The Purge and all bets were off, you'd be punching that kid in the face. That's what you're saying, isn't it, Luke? That's not what I'm saying, but
yeah, it's you know, Jennifer Kent, the director, did a great job in casting the most annoying kids you could find.
I find that's one thing that this film has got in common with the American counterparts of these type of films is that the kids are always annoying. There's never a film where you think The kid was spot on in that film.
Yeah.
The kids are always annoying. I mean, we take it back to like the US remake of The Ring, and then obviously subsequently the American remake of The Ring 2.
Yeah.
The kid was intolerable.
Yeah.
And it kind of ruined it for me and there's a few other kids, you know.
But do you
I'm just totally over it. Those
kids are annoying, just because they're annoying kids. But this kid was intentionally annoying. You know what I mean, for the story?
Yeah, I can understand. He was intentionally annoying, but I'm sure there was an element of he's brought an extra level of annoying to the table. I can't imagine they've cast him so. He's the Robert De Niro.
He's like Oscar worthy actor, like the Daniel Day Lewis of annoying child acting. he was in character for the first 8 years of his life, and then he was practicing every day.
And he's only six. He's been doing it before he was even a twinkle in his dad's eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he is a shitbag, let's be honest.
I mean, so I think the idea is that we kind of feel the frustration of the mum. We're scared. She's kind of scared of the kid because he's sort of a loose cannon, but she's also scared of what she's going to do to the kid, which I think plays into the fear and the manifestation of the Babadook itself. I got some Tim Burton vibes from this. I don't know about you. It's sort of like a much heavier, darker, more dramery Tim Burton vibe, but I think it's just something to do with the child storybook stop motion animation bits.
I know what you mean. I got a little bit of that vibe. I think it's not just because of the storybook stuff. I think the color palette in this film is quite washed out. Everyone's quite pale, and obviously that's done on purpose. But that's the other Tim Burton vibe I got from it.
The house
dark
as well,
circles like around their eyes.
Yeah, the house and location is very stylistic as well. It seems very clean and not like a real house. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like real. It almost looks like a house from 30 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, something's really old and lived in. Almost like that they've got that house like it was lived in by her parents or something, and they've sort of taken it on ever since then, and they haven't redecorated.
It's got like a CRT TV.
Yeah. Also, have you noticed whenever they're watching TV, there's nothing on. There's nothing on. But
it's like old royalty free stock footage of like old I don't know what you described as something, but the black and white horror
disturbing.
Films are old. Yeah, disturbing imagery and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, and I'll just be like, if I was in a situation where like there was possibly a demonic presence in the house, and I was possibly having some sort of mental breakdown, I'll just turn that TV off, you know, because it's not going to be good for you. It's just a lot of horrible stuff. Yeah.
It's in terms of like royalty free, I'm sure I heard a few sound effects that I know from games.
Yes.
There
was a sound effect.
Yeah.
There was a sound effect that was used at least four times.
Yeah.
It sounds almost like a dog and almost like a T-Rex as well.
Yes, I know exactly. I'm sure there's a T-Rex out there.
That noise is used in the original Resident Evil game when the Cerberus dogs attack, and it's used over and over again, and that noise has wormed its way into my subconscious, and it must be a stock footage because I hear it on stuff all the time. Yeah. It's almost like the Wilhelm scream type thing.
You
know, the weird scream, which is like, which you hear in stuff all the time. It's like in Indiana Jones. It's like in dozens of films. It was like that. Every time I heard it, I was like...
Do you think it's intentional, or do you think they just didn't have as much money?
I don't know. It's hard to say, really, isn't it?
Because it's quite pronounced, that sound effect, when it happens.
Yeah.
Because when it go, I think it's when the Babadook goes into her mouth, and then it cuts to the next day, and you hear like a like T-Rex.
Yeah,
dog
it's
noise.
Like when it her pupils dilate, it sort of makes that noise, and then later on when you see it again, it pupils dilate. But there's a lot of metaphor in this film as well, isn't there? And there's a lot of very serious issues, I think, being tackled in certain ways.
Yeah.
I mean, there's grief. I'm assuming there's like postnatal depression. I'm not entirely sure what it's called, but hating your kids.
Yeah.
You know, this is all pretty serious stuff, and pretty, and obviously stuff that was very relevant.
And the kid's got his
story.
Own issues. He's scared of the monsters under the bed.
No, there's no father figure in their life, and obviously they kind of like blame each other for the fact that there isn't, because obviously their dad's died for whatever reason. So I mean, it's all pretty deep, very intense sort of subject matter. I think it's dealt with pretty well. In places, it feels a bit overcooked.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. A bit chewy. Okay. Cool. So the key players in the film, Basically got the two characters, Amelia, who's the mum, and Samuel, who's the annoying child. So I think the first shot in the title sequence is that one where I think it's the car crashing. I think the idea is that they're on the way to the maternity ward. She's about to give birth, and the car crashes, and that's when the father figure, Oscar, dies. And then it cuts to this shot of them lying in the bed. This is before the actual film's properly started. They're lying in bed, and the mother, Amelia, is far on the right-hand side, facing away from her son, and Samuel's facing her back, and there's like a vast distance between the two of them. And I mean, that kind of just tells you exactly what the film's about. Like, the kid's kind of lechy, won't sleep in his own bed, and she's trying to get away from him, trying to, like, just retreat inwards and from like the relationship with her son, and she just wants to be sort of left to her grief.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a good establishing shot for us to work out the relationship between these two characters, and then obviously we find out soon enough exactly why.
Yeah. So, in terms of the story of the film, so it starts out with pretty much just various elements of an annoying kid. So he doesn't go to bed. Like, he wakes up at night, he comes and sleeps in her bed all the time. He says, like, imaginary monsters. He's built these weapons. So I think one of the first shots is him, like, with a saw, and he's like building this, like, I have no idea how he made this. I couldn't build this as a 8-year-old.
Yeah,
this sort of backpack with this, like, ball throwing device.
Yeah. Why don't you just throw the ball, you know, having a bloody arm, like, actually better velocity, I guess, I don't know. But yeah,
I mean, he does it in the mud, doesn't he? She's like, don't you use that in the house? And he goes, no, look. And he uses it, and he goes straight through the window. Yeah. And immediately establishes how annoying the kid is.
Like, don't use that in the house. Yeah, but have a look at this. Sorry.
Yeah, I've done that before. I remember playing with like a table leg as if it was a lightsaber and smashing my bedroom light by accident.
Fear. Yeah. What was that terrifying for you at the time?
Yeah. You know, you hear like the footsteps of your mum coming up the stairs.
Yeah.
Oh no.
What was that?
Oh, I made a terrible mistake.
I remember I left a figurine of Michelangelo, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, on a lamp once, and it like melted, proper melted.
It's not really your fault, is it? It's the lamp's fault.
It's the lamp's fault. Lamp did it. But I remember. Instead of like going, oh, mum, get me a new Michelangelo, I just carried on playing with that Michelangelo, but pretended he'd been in a horrible accident, but he was still coping. He was like, he was just...
Yeah, you kind of, when you're a kid like that, you've got these toys, even the messed up ones, or like the fake toys that aren't the real licensed figures.
Yep.
You kind of, they all have their own little backstories, and they all sort of intermingle. Yeah.
Given their establishing character backstories, and then that's fine. Yeah. And I think even the toys would like make fun of him, going, "Oh bloody hell, look at the state of you," and he'd be like, "Oh, don't worry about it." Pizza.
Did you have like a whole subplot of grief of the guy who's mentally scarred?
I think I did, yeah. But I can't go into it anymore. So
have you still got that story?
It's probably at my mum's house, yeah. Somewhere in the loft.
Yeah. So. I think I've got. I used to have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles spoon that I used to have all my fruit corner yogurts with, and I loved that spoon. It just had their faces on it. But it was great.
What was your favorite fruit corner yogurt? You ate
strawberry, classic.
Yeah, that's a standard, isn't it? I mean, that's lovely.
Plain,
really salted flavor.
So more annoying kid stuff. She has to pick him up from the school because he's. I don't think he goes into detail. I think he's been annoying. He's been really annoying again.
He's done some absolute nonsense school, and they're like, "Come on, we've had enough of this. We've already told you time and time again that he's a shitbag, and you can't seem to accept it."
Yeah. And then I think we start to get the idea from all the other adults in the story that they kind of hate him as well. That the teachers hate him. Everyone's tired of his shit.
I mean, it's unfortunate, isn't it, really? Because the poor little soul. I mean, he's had a lot to deal with growing up, and you know, I don't think his mum has been in the best way from start to finish. So it's not his fault, really.
No.
I mean, he is a shitbag, but it's not his fault.
No. Yeah. No. He just needs a bit of love. Just needs a bit of love.
He needs a lot of love, doesn't he? He needs a lot of love.
So it's that night when she brings him home that she reads, which says, pick a book and we'll read the book. And he picks the Babadook book. And the first time you read it, I think it's kind of creepy. I don't think it was that creepy. I don't know about you.
No, the first time you read it, it was just a little bit, a little bit odd. But it's just one, it's reminding me of one of these gothic sort of like fairy tales that you see.
Yeah.
So even though it's a little bit dark, it's not utterly, utterly terrifying.
But like, I mean, a lot of kids' books, those sort of fairy tales are super dark, like, and creepy. Like, of grim fairy tales, you always end up with like people getting beheaded and...
Yeah, people getting eaten. Cooking pots. Cannibalism. And
so. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So after they read it, they don't really get to the end of the book because it just cuts, it jump cuts to the kid crying and kicking his legs against the bed saying the Babadook's under the bed or he's under the bed or something like that. So again, he has to sleep in her bed, I think. So then...
There was a couple of good shots during these bits. Like there was a shot where Amelia had her head under the covers and there was like a really sort of like sped up.
Yeah, I like those sort of elements when they did that. It's like a nature documentary. You know, they speed up like the ant carrying something up the hill or whatever.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of shots obviously where she was floating down towards the bed.
Yeah. It just sort of adds to like the unnatural sort of uncanniness of it all.
Yeah. She's annoying as well, though, isn't she, Amelia?
She is, but I can kind of see where she's coming from.
You can still see like there's still like an essence of the person she used to be, like the way she interacts with that dude who works at the care home with her.
Yeah.
So they have a little bit of a laugh and joke. Like she's in the kitchen. He comes in saying, "Oh, a woman. She does have rest where she should be in the kitchen." And she goes, "Oh, you sexist pig." And they have like a little bit of a back and forth. I mean,
there is a bit of normality in her. Like she's not completely messed up.
Yeah, but when she's away from Sam, the little.
Yeah, it's a good dude, point. Yeah.
When she's away from him, it's kind of like, yeah. But yeah, when we see the other people, like her sister, it is her sister, isn't it?
You are right, because she also plays about with the bingo calling. Like, it's a shit job, but she's having a bit of, not fun, but she's trying to make a joke of it all. And that's only, it's only when she's not with Sam.
Yeah, that she kind of, like, seems a bit more normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't muck about with the bingo calling, though. I mean, that's serious stuff. That's serious stuff. There's someone there who's on the brink of winning that game, and you've just gone 5 billion. No, don't muck about with these things, right?
It's not even particularly witty.
No, people got bragging rights in the care home. Who's winning the bingo?
Yeah,
you know, if you won the bingo for the day, you know, you can do what you want basically for the rest of the day. You can eat what you want. You can just do anything you want. You can get the best chair.
The best chair.
Yeah,
I don't know about the intricacies of old people life.
you will do.
I will do. Yeah.
Get
hopefully, unless I snuff it.
I need a good die young, Luke.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're not good.
Okay, so, you know, it's more like weird. There's some weird noises in the house when they're trying to sleep and that kind of thing. She attributes it all to Sam's behavior, but he keeps saying it's the Babadook.
It's so the bloody Babadook.
It's that Babadook again. So she rips up the book. Did she burn it? No, she didn't burn it yet. I think she just rips it up and puts it in the bin.
She rips it up and puts it in the bin because she's sick of Sam going on about the Babadook book, saying the Babadook's doing this, Babadook's doing that.
Yeah.
So she goes, have this. Book's ripped up in a bin. How'd you feel about that, Sam? Yeah. Oh, look at you. You're screeching again.
So this it really starts ramping up now with the kid. So it's at the birthday party. So it's Sam's cousin's birthday party. She's a little girl. She's popular. She's got a little, what do you call those houses? The playhouses in the back garden.
Wendy house.
She's got
it's like raised off the ground as well, isn't it?
Yeah, she's got like all these friends running around. Did it?
She's dressed like a princess.
She's dressed like a princess. And then she, I can't remember her name. The woman, Amelia. She's talking to her sister. And I think they're trying to talk normally, but the conversation is a little strained. You can tell. Yeah. You can tell she hates the kid as well.
Well, I think she says it at this point.
She does.
I think her sister says she can't bear it.
I can't stand your
Can't stand your little shitbag of a son. Well, that's a bit mean, isn't it?
Yeah. But then she says, I don't think you can either. And then whilst
she's
this
like,
is happening...
You got me. Got my number.
Yeah. And she's no, he's a good boy. He's really good. Don't worry about it. And whilst that's happening, Sam pushes the birthday girl, out of the
house. She is winding him up big time. You know, he's in the corner and he's cowering and she's going, you ain't even got a dad, mate. You're scum, or something like that. She's really having a go at him. This is probably one of the times I felt sorry for Sam, even though he's been screeching like a motherfucker like a Zubat. I felt a bit sorry for him at this point. You know, it's not his fault.
Yeah.
And Ruby's giving him shit.
Yeah.
And she won't shut up. She's really giving it that, and she gets her comeuppance essentially, which is pushed out of Wendy house, and her nose gets flattened like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty...
I was kind of expecting him to moonsault out of there onto her on the ground to finish her off.
By God! By God!
Yeah. So then, obviously... he doesn't do himself any favours because everyone's like looked at this kid who's just suplexed the birthday girl out of the window.
And he's gone, it wasn't bloody me. She was going, oh, you're not having her dad. It's like, no one cares about that now, mate. You just suplexed her out the window. You shouldn't have done that. That was out of order.
Should have wrote a novel about it or something, you know, bury it deep.
Yeah.
And then, so she's dragged this, but oh my God, this kid is so annoying. At this point, I was watching this with Kat, and Kat was like, I don't think I can watch anymore because he's so annoying. So they're driving away from the birthday, and the mum's super pissed. Sam's in the back screaming about the Babadook, and he's kicking the back of a chair. The driver's seat chair, and like it's fever pitch. It's like, oh my God, if this is what parenthood is like, you know, you are a parent, I'm not, but I don't know. Can you relate to her in any way in this?
I guess so a little bit, but I mean, this kid's extreme. This kid's extreme.
So,
you know, I mean, I won't be tolerant any of that. I'll be like, no, mate, no.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so annoying. And then it cuts to. He has like a seizure or something. Like he starts saying, "He sits the bad looks in the car."
He kind of like looks up into the corner of the car, just like out of nowhere, and he's like, "Oh my God, is the Babadook?" The Babadook, and obviously, his mum at this point is like, "What the hell are you talking about, you bloody nutcase?" And then he has a little fit.
Yeah, and then we cut to there's a scene where she's at the pediatrician and she's like, you know, drained. She's like, look, just give me some drugs for the kid. Like, there's something wrong with him. I can't bear to do this anymore. The kid is so annoying. And Kat even said, it would cut to a scene later on, and the Babadook would be saying the same thing to the same pediatrician. He's like, I can't do this anymore. That kid, there's something wrong with him.
I've been trying to taunt this kid. Every time I usually taunt a new kid, you know, they get terrified, and you know, this one's got traps and different
whiny.
Things.
Can't
Home Alone.
So
Home Alone. He's set the house up like Home Alone.
Yeah.
it's just too much, to be fair.
Yeah, but I think does he? Yeah, so she gets some tablets for him.
Yeah, some tranquilizers, didn't she?
Like, is it Ritalin? Is that what it's called?
You might be riddled with it. I don't know. Ritalin.
You know the ADHD drug? I think it might be called Ritalin.
That's the thing. They don't really talk about ADHD too much. I mean, or if the fact if this kid could be on the autistic spectrum, they never really mention anything like that. It's kind of like, but maybe this whole Babadook thing is a representation of some sort of mental illness for both of them, really, isn't it? Whether it's ADHD for him or depression for her, it kind of represents something.
I think it kind of shows. When she gets the tablets for him, obviously it doesn't work. If anything, it's sort of, that's when things start to get worse. So it's not, it's obviously not the way to treat whatever the issue is.
Yeah.
So it's the morning after. So he's had his sleepy pills, and then it's the morning after the Babadook book is back on the doorstep. And I found this was one of the most terrifying scenes in the film, I thought, when she reads the book for the second time, and there's more pages added. Cause it's
someone's pretty good at making a pop-up book, though.
Oh, yeah. I was like, that's genius. Like, if you could make pop-up books like that and make them as creepy as that. Because so she opens it, it's the same as before, but then it goes further in the story. So it's like, it has her strangling, like it pops up and has a cutout of her strangling the dog. And then, I don't know how they do it. I don't think you can do this in a real pop-up book, but it's sort of the neck snaps. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then has her killing the kid as well, strangling the kid. But it's like the way it's shot is so jittery and so, and the sound effects are so on point. It's one of the scariest parts in the film.
Mm. Yeah, it was good. I like that pop-up book. I want to read it.
Yeah, me too, yeah. So, obviously, she gets rid of it again. She burns it. And then, oh, no, she gets a phone call from the Babadook as well.
Yeah.
And we hear his Babadook voice for the first
Babadook
time.
Babadook. Yeah, I mean, this. How did you feel about this voice?
I wasn't too keen on it. I thought it seemed a little bit cheesy for me.
Yeah. Yeah, the phone call of it calling the... I think it would have been just as effective if the Babadook didn't ring up to have a little chat with her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got long... As far as we can see, he's got ever such long fingers. So I don't know how it dialed the number.
Yeah.
Really. But, yeah, it kind of... it kind of gives... Bah, bah, dah,
but it didn't like say that, the duck... This is like... Baba, it's just like a pig squeal. Yeah, so it's sort of like a guttural hardcore death metal voice, it's like a death metal warm up. I think is the best way to.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Describe
it. Yeah. Babadook would be a good front man for a grindcore band, possibly.
I just thought, because when people were telling me to watch it, they said it's super creepy and the way he talks is super creepy. But I didn't find that. I just found it kind of cheap, the voice sound effects.
Yeah, it wasn't the best, was it? It was a little bit, I guess it was a little bit spine tingling, but almost I don't know. It wasn't massively effective. But I think the book was effective.
Yeah, the book was enough for me.
And after she burns the book, she gets the phone call and then she goes to the police. And obviously to tell them all about the book, which she's just burnt. So they're like, you burnt the book?
I do think the police are a little bit non-helpful here. Like, I think unhelpful police is kind of a cliche. You know, I watched Get Out the other day and they're in that as well. Like, they're really super unhelpful police.
Yeah.
But I suppose what they're supposed to do, because it's just a book. But like, she did get a phone call. Shouldn't they look into that? And
yeah. And they're like, what did he say? Well, I didn't really say anything, just making noises and stuff. Or, well, if he didn't say actual words,
yes,
then we're afraid we can't put that down as somebody possibly stalking you.
If he didn't say actual words, then how can we be sure that it's
a person?
It's a person, yeah. I can say, if he said actual words, he wouldn't be that scary. Like,
yeah.
It's the fact that he's not saying, it's the fact that he's not saying words that it's creeping me the hell out.
What about your son is a right shit bag?
Just dial-up connection.
Add you like my new book that I made for you. That took fucking hours. That took hours. And you've just burnt it on a barbecue.
You did what? You burnt it.
Ah, all the time. The man hours.
I was going to put that on Etsy. It would sell quite a lot on Etsy.
It'd do really well on Etsy.
So what happens? Oh, yeah. So the police don't believe her. And then she sees a coat. This coat I seem to see throughout the film. It's like a coat and a hat, like on a rack, and it looks like the Babadook. Does she see anything happening there, like the hands, creepy hands or something?
No, I think she just sees it. She kind of just goes, "Oh," and then because her hands are all covered in soot from burning the book, she kind of like goes, "Oh, no, don't look at me hands."
Yeah. I wonder if there's something there. Like, she's got black fingers like the Babadook. Maybe she's becoming the Babadook there, symbolically. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? The director, maybe.
Irrelevant.
Okay. So what happened after that? So I think it's the actual scene now, isn't it? The Babadook nighttime scene.
Yeah, well, we kind of get the impression that they become like sort of isolated and quite shut in for quite a number of days here. Is that not right? Where they kind of like just they stay in the house and kind of like just start going into a bit of a downward spiral together, where she's kind of losing it, and Sam's sort of under the influence from these tranquilizers, so he's kind of like constantly tired or scared or.
Yeah, she's like, yeah. She's got the headaches and toothache and stuff, right?
Toothache.
She goes, that is terrible. I hate having a toothache. So she goes to bed. There's a noise at the door. It's kind of creepy. She opens the door. The little dog runs in. By the way, I was scared for this dog now. After seeing, the book, it kind of tells you exactly what's going to happen. I was super scared for the dog. But she lets the dog in. Yeah. It's always the dog that gets it. and then the noise is still there, and then the Babadook creeps across the ceiling and leaps like swan dives into her throat. What did you think about that?
Yeah.
Did you find it creepy?
I find this a little bit creepy, yeah. So you kind of like, the door opens, you see sort of like a shape or a shadow or something move into the room.
Yeah.
And then into the shadows. And then it kind of like weird stop motion.
Yeah.
Odd. You didn't really see the Babadook. It's kind of like a weird, dodgy shape, isn't it, at this point?
Yeah.
Almost looks a bit like Venom from Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
At this point.
He reminds me, he's kind of got like a whole voodoo look to it. Like Papa Lazaru, you know, League of Gentlemen sort of thing going on. In fact, Papa Lazaru.
It's incredible amount like that. Exactly. Yeah. I thought that. So, I mean, but you never really see perfectly, don't you? You don't really see him perfectly. Also, like, looks like a bit like the spirit of Jazz from Mike Boosh as well.
Yeah.
I kind of thought. But, yeah, you don't really see it perfectly. Or if you do, it's kind of like a weird series of shapes and you don't see anything clear. You never see, like, a face or anything as such, do you?
Yeah. I think... It was kind of creepy. I do think it's a cool character. I don't know if I needed to see. I kind of wish he was a bit more just in the shadows and just like. I didn't want to see his white face or anything like that. And I don't have to stop motion stuff. I don't really like the camera going into the mouth thing. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. It kind of makes me feel like I'm not watching a horror film and I'm watching, I don't know, like an art film or something, like a student short film.
I guess so. At this point, that's obviously supposed to be a representation of the Babadook is taking her over. The Babadook is getting inside her, getting under her skin.
So
I think it was at this point I sort of realized that the Babadook was a representation of something else rather than like a physical monster or a physical presence or something like that.
They're not cursed, it's not like a witch thing. It's not like a demon. It's not like what's that film called with the creepy face like that when he comes through TV screens and stuff. There's been a load of them recently. I'll remember it. I think it's another Blumhouse film.
Comes through TV screens?
Yeah.
I don't know. Modern.
Yeah, modern. Super modern. It's like...
Paranormal Activity? No.
No.
Comes through the TV screen at Jeremy Kyle.
He makes the kids kill the adults.
Well, I don't know.
Oh well, I'll remember it and we'll come back to it.
So
essentially, I think she's been not possessed, but she's the Babadook is now inside her. So the seed has been planted. We start to get a lot more sort of weird scenes. So there's the bit with the bugs coming out of the wall.
Yeah.
There's the bit with the bugs in the car, and they like appear and disappear, and then it sort of she has like the various visions. So it's like she's watching a weird TV with the royalty-free videos, and like the Babadook I think appears there, So he's basically like he's like sort of plaguing her now. Like he's sort of everywhere. And then she sees, I think, downstairs in the basement, which is where they keep all of Oscar's, the dead father's stuff. I mean, that's where she goes down there and she sees Oscar. And he says, "Bring me the boy," or something along those lines.
Yeah, and his voice is quite distorted and
yeah,
strange, isn't it? Yeah, there's another part where she's washing up and she looks across to her like elderly neighbor who's just sat there watching TV, just relaxing. Then she kind of looks back down at what she's doing, and when she looks back up, there's like a figure stood behind her. But she sort of like smashes a plate, and then suddenly Sam appears again. Mommy!
Oh god, yeah.
And then the figure's gone. I think that was quite effective. That was quite creepy.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. And then so after I think after Oscar's asked for the boy in the Babadook's sort of weird creepy voice, is that when it all shit hits the fan?
She starts to lose her shit pretty extremely, doesn't she? Mood swings. She kind of goes back and forth from saying, "Oh Sam, I'm so sorry," and to the next minute telling him to go eat shit.
Because
he just comes up and says, "Look, Mum, I'm hungry. I want to eat something. I'm hungry. I'm bloody starving." She was like, "If you're so hungry, why don't you go eat shit?"
Go eat shit. And then obviously she feels bad about that. That's too far. She goes, even if you're possessed by like a demon, you should never really tell a kid to eat shit.
Yeah, there must be a moment where she said that, and then she just went. She had a little quiet moment with the Babadook, and she went, "Look, I know you're possessing me, and you're making me basically evil. But don't make me tell my kid to eat shit. And that's harsh."
I always wonder about like little actors in these. Like, you know, when you get little kid actors in adult films. Yeah. Like, big props to a kid who can, I don't know, like, see an adult do that and then not sort of be mentally scarred in some way.
Yeah, or laugh.
Or laugh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So the mood swing. So she's like sat, she's like nursing her headache, and then the dog runs in, Bugsy. And then, unfortunately, you know, the inevitable happens. He gets the dog and breaks its neck and sort of just drops it on the floor. And then she pulls the tooth out as well. Just drops that on the floor as well.
Yeah, so the tooth that she was obviously, that was hurting her.
Yeah.
She pulls that right out of her gob. Killed a dog, pulled her own tooth out of her bare hands. I mean, that's an intense Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah. And then...
And then she starts going after Sam like she just wants to...
And this is the bit where it's got the ambling stuff. So he starts to try to use his weird little backpack that throws balls. None of it really does anything.
His little Ghostbusters backpack.
Like, did they really need all that stuff? Like, okay, so I understand that he's sort of been preparing for this sort of monster attack or whatever's happening now. But now
he's using it on his mum.
But like that backpack, and I feel like that backpack is too advanced. It's almost like Home Alone style. It's the next level of Home Alone. It's like building machinery.
What this film needed was a montage of this kid building all this stuff, set to the Home Alone soundtrack.
Yeah. See, I don't think he should have just had like a baseball bat or something believable, like more natural. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it gets a bit slapstick now, because she starts running down the stairs into the basement with him, and he pulls a sort of bit of string and it trips her up. It's like, doink!
Yeah, we've got the Carry On films are like making a comeback again.
I genuinely almost fell off my chair then. I'm not even joking. It goes quite far back, and I keep forgetting. Look how far back it goes.
God, that's scary.
That could have been the end. That would have been a good little moment for the horror hangout, I believe.
Whilst making that noise.
Oh my god. Yeah.
So I definitely should have gone that slapstick with it. But, you know, whatever they want to do, it's their film. So then we have like, she knocks herself out or something. He wakes up and Sam's tied down.
He knocks her out, doesn't he? He hits her with like a fucking with a fire extinguisher or something. He's like, and then she wakes up all tied up.
Yeah,
she's pretty scary. She's pretty scary at this point.
Yeah, she's completely babadooked out. She gets her hand out of the knot and she strangles the kid. And then while she's strangling the kid, she just sort of gently caresses the face. So she stops. Throws up some inky black
squid ink.
Squid ink, yeah. And then I think that's her like expelling the demon or the Babadook to a degree.
Yeah, it's kind of like a bit. It's kind of like a physical representation of her expelling the demon, but I don't know. I don't know if it worked for me as much.
Yeah, because I think this is when it gets really metaphorical. Like, it's completely like lost any sense of being an evil entity, because so I think they got rid of the Babadook, but then he's still there. I think he starts throwing the kid around, like
He drags the kid up the stairs.
Yeah,
they,
yeah. So
they obviously have a moment where they're like, "I think we're all right now. No, don't worry, I'm so sorry." And he just goes, "Ah!" the stairs,
which it's pretty funny. Kind of enjoyed. Poor kid, but I did kind of find that a bit funny.
Yeah. I imagine like had he got that effect to work and what they were doing to him.
Yeah.
Just dragging him up the stairs by a piece of rope.
Yeah.
Go! It was quite funny. I did laugh at that bit.
Yeah.
And he was getting slung around the room like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah. So then it makes her watch the husband dying over and over again in the car crash. Again, it gets a bit student art filmy for me. But then I'm not sure what happens there, but she basically says no and she stands up. I think it's the first time she hugs and embraces her kid. I think for the first time it's her hugging her kid. And I mean, maybe that's the metaphor is the turning point where she does that. And the Babadook goes into the basement.
I thought this stuff was kind of all right with the Babadook like in the shadows and her sort of like confronting it.
Yeah.
There was a weird bit where it was like from the Babadook's point of view where it kind of like it sort of like lit up her face and she was sort of like it's like she saw it face to face for the first time.
Yeah.
And then that was the realization that she knows what it is now.
Yeah.
And that now she can sort of like tackle it head on.
Yeah.
But yeah, then it goes into the basement and she goes and locks it in there.
And then So if we take this film as a purely sort of metaphor film, it wears the metaphor and it's still quite, you know, heavily. So then it's almost like the grief or whatever this dark thing is that's been there since the husband and father died, that sort of separates her from her kid. It's now she's sort of realized what it is. She embraces her kid and she's able to never get rid of it, because you can't get rid of the Babadook, the grief. It's always going to be there, but you can put it away and sort of overcome it in a way and live with it.
Yeah, so it's always going to like linger in the background, but yeah, you have to move on, live with it, and eventually get better. But yeah, she's feeding it like earthworms and soil.
That's how it ends, isn't it? So it ends with this bit where the kids doing magic tricks. We didn't mention that, but he does magic tricks. And now she's like watching him, enjoying him. She's happy with him, doing some gardening. There's a shot of the dead dog in the garden that I didn't notice the first time.
Was the dead dog?
So as it pans over the flower bed, there's like just some white fur and the dog's face, like half buried in the mud.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So like they're sort of happy now. And then they sort of get some worms and they take that and they feed that to the Babadook. Which I thought was kind of, I don't know what that means, what that represents. Why is it suddenly eating worms?
Yeah. I don't know. But it seems to like almost, it tries to go for her, doesn't it? It's like, come on, Ned. And she goes, just calm down, Babadook. Get yourself back in the corner, enjoy those worms.
Yeah, it's almost she's now equipped to handle that demon in her basement. So just steady on.
I mean, almost every bloody shot is probably littered with metaphor, like all over the shop, which is good. Does it sort of help the narrative of this film? Maybe not, because I think it like meanders a little bit, this film. Stuff just kind of happens all over the place, and I don't know.
So you kind of find both of the characters super annoying as they sort of push each other away, and then once they get over it, they seem to be, I think they kind of win you over a bit towards the end. By the end I'm not that angry at the kid. I just kind of realized that
they're not super annoying anymore. By the end of it, they're just annoying.
just plain annoying. But I mean, so yeah, it's almost like, I just don't feel like when you watch a horror movie, we're as used to seeing something that is so full of simile and metaphor. And we're kind of used to seeing films where the plot and the story is actually happening. You know, it's like there's an actual physical entry, and like that, all of the subplot and all of the themes are kind of hidden away to a certain degree, where you, on like a set, like a few watches, you start to pull away, like with Drag Me to Hell. So I do feel like there are subplots and sub themes there, but I think they're so well hidden in the narrative. It's only there when you sort of start to pick away at it. Whereas this, that is the story, that is the film, and the plot is almost and the demon almost takes second stage.
I think it kind of suffers a little bit from that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's presented as like a psychological horror.
Yeah.
But it does feel like a sort of a real exploration of sort of the psychological horror side of things.
Yeah. I think you've got to give it props for doing it in this different, unique way. But
it's definitely very unique. I mean, definitely.
I mean, if you think about it, no characters die apart from the dog. That's kind of unusual for a horror film. So I don't think really. This is another one of those cases of it's not really a full-on horror film. If that makes sense, it's a drama, it's a relationship drama.
Mm.
Okay, so are you ready for some? Or in fact, we've kind of talked about the directing style throughout the bit there. You know, it's got the washed-out colors, Tim Burton-esque sort of shadows, stop motion, jittery stuff happening. But was there any jump scares that we didn't talk about or shit your pants moments? For me, the pop-up book is the main one.
Yeah, I don't think there were really any jump scares. It was kind of, as I said, it kind of felt like it was setting up for a certain jump scare that you were kind of expecting, and it didn't really hit home as you expected it to. But that was good, you know. I didn't really want that.
Yeah.
I don't think it necessarily needed it. Shit your pants moments. There are a couple of creepy bits, like where the Babadook was kind of like it came out of the chimney at one point, and was sort of like. And she was crawling away ever so slowly. I thought that was quite creepy.
Yeah,
I think it's because I expected to see something a little bit different, and eventually I did.
So this is the first time you watched it. Are you happy with the film being on this list and being in the top 50 horror films of all time?
I don't think it's... even though I hadn't seen it, this being included on the list, I was a bit like, really? Is this film really included on the list?
Yeah.
And from watching it again, I guess the way the list is going... the fact there are some classics, some stuff from decades ago, the Hammer Horror stuff, and then obviously the sort of classics that you would expect to be on there. The fact that this was on there, I mean, it's only a few years old. And from what I knew of the film, I was a bit like, didn't really expect it to be on there. Now I've seen the film, I don't know if I necessarily want to include it in the top 50, my top 50 anyway. But I guess it has its place.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Okay, so... Are you ready for some trivia? I think some of these things we have kind of mentioned, so you probably get those right. Based on a short film Jennifer made in 2005 called Monster. True or false?
That is very true. Totally true.
Jennifer Kent, the director, holds the full rights to the film because she doesn't want there to ever be a sequel. So instead of like Insidious 2 or these kind of, you know, cash grab,
If someone made a sequel of this, it would just be awful, wouldn't it? Someone would take it and they go, right, let's do a monster film. Let's get a Babadook, run down a street.
you could it's a pretty complete story. You can't really.
Yeah. True.
True. Yeah. In Hebrew, Babadook means beware, super annoying kid.
True.
No, false.
What?
It does mean something though. I think it means like. He comes or something like that. So I've got here a vocal sample from the opening cinematic of the PlayStation 1 game Resident Evil can be heard multiple times during the final confrontation. So the vocal sample, I don't know if it means the one we talked about.
Yeah, it's got it. That's true. Is that genuine?
Yeah, it's genuine. So it says a vocal sample from the opening cinematic, I'm trying to remember what that is. That's when they're running through the woods and stuff.
Yeah, it's when they're running through the woods and the Cerberus dogs are like after them. So they kind of like, they go, quick, quick, run for that house. And that is it. So that's actually true.
That's the sound we're talking about.
I didn't know that was actually it. That was just me saying, I swear that's the sound.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I've got a good ear for Resident Evil vocal samples, obviously.
Yeah. Can you do an impression? It's sort of like that, that sort of.
I was just going to do an impression of a line for Resident Evil. Oh. you were almost a Jill sandwich. But the impression of that, that thing, is it's like goes...
Is that wobble bit? Yeah.
It's very... It's like a dog slash man, man dog.
Yeah.
Or a T-Rex, which is what it sounds like a bit as well. That has been used in something else then.
It makes me think of Jurassic Park. Oh, maybe Dino Crisis. Or
yeah,
something dinosaur-y.
What a game, Dino Crisis. I loved it. Fantastic.
Yeah. So, the last piece of trivia. Director Jennifer Kent was in the 1998 film Babe, Pig in the City.
Got to be true.
It is true. She's an actress. She's been in loads of films. Babe, Pig in the City was just one of my favourites.
Yeah, that's the one, isn't it?
Actually, I don't think I've seen that one. I like Babe.
Did we ever get a third Babe? Babe, so. Pig in the Circus.
Factory. You know, McDonald's did the... when Babe came out, McDonald's had like Babe toys and stuff. So kids could play with the little pig toys as they were eating their... I guess
bacon cheeseburger.
Bacon cheeseburger, whatever, yeah. I just thought this was kind of weird. Because it kind of good, because the whole point of Babe is that you know he's smart and doesn't you don't eat him. That's maybe.
I don't eat Babe, mate.
No.
He's a little square, don't he, Babe? What a square.
Yeah. his little soft snouts moving little around. Soft
guzzling snout and delicious meat.
Okay, so we've got to grade the film. By the way, you got all those right. Oh, last piece of trivia. Andy Serkis, question mark?
Is that just... what did Andy Serkis play in this?
Well, I don't know. So I'm asking you.
He was the kid, wasn't he? He was the kid.
He was the kid. Did you notice, by the way, the kid had separated teeth. Like, and he looked kind of like the Babadook, the drawing of the Babadook.
Or, did
like,
he?
There was resemblances there. Yeah, I noticed that. I don't know if it's just because... He's got a very creepy face, this kid. Like,
yeah, bless him.
Yeah. Okay, so
when they were casting this kid, they were like, right, we need to find an annoying kid who's like annoying because the film needs him to be annoying, but also actually annoying. And we need him to kind of look like this drawing of this Babadook.
Yeah.
Where are we going to find this kid? Let's hold open audition today. Oh my God, we found him.
There's this little shit around the corner. He's he's perfect. Shit,
and he's got to be able to act, or is he acting?
I don't think he's acting. Right. And said, just... You know, imagine something scary is happening. Go on. And he does it.
Good kid. Go on.
Like I said, he's method acting. He's Daniel Day-Lewis.
I've got really hot ears today.
You have.
I don't know what it is.
You've got lovely hot ears.
Oh, they're boiling.
So we've got to grade the film. Did you want to go first?
Yeah. I'd probably go for a C, possibly. Okay. I think a C for me. I mean, I wasn't massively... I mean, I could appreciate a lot of elements of it. I thought it was well made. But I think sometimes when you watch something and you do feel kind of annoyed by every character.
Yeah.
Which happens occasionally, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to really like it. And I think in terms of narrative, I think it was lacking quite a lot. I completely understand what it was doing with a lot of the metaphor and the fact that it was kind of like a representation of a lot of this stuff, like the depression element and... For me anyway. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
But as a horror film as such, it was unique, which is I really like that with horror films, that's my favourite, but didn't really do it for me.
Yeah.
Just to see.
Okay. So I think I enjoyed it more than you. Well, I'd say enjoyed is the wrong term. But I do like that it was very I think in a world like today where you've got all the almost like creepypasta films. You know what I mean? Like the whole sort of Slenderman vibe. I think they tried to sort of take that and do something quite interesting. The whole sort of abstract metaphors throughout the film. So I'm going to give it a B. I do like it. I don't know if I want to watch it again. I think I think to some people this film is an A, but to me, there's something that just doesn't quite vibe with me. Something about it I just don't enjoy.
No. It felt like a little bit of a slog to me. For something that's only like 90 minutes long, there were times I was a bit like, what?
So what does that say? So that gives us a B minus, I think, or a C plus.
Yeah. B for Babadook.
Yeah. Okay, so next week we are talking about We've got like three films that Ben, I think, is going to like absolutely love. We've got Bride of Frankenstein next. Is it Bride of Frankenstein? Yeah, I think it is.
1938?
The three films coming up are all from the 30s, which is about 50 years before your cutoff, your cliff, where you don't like films.
not 50.
40 years, sorry.
I think my cliff, 69.
Right, okay.
That's not a dirty thing.
Okay, so
cliff, I think
30 to 40 years, you know, of before the cliff. It's still a long time before the cliff, before Ben's cliff of taste. Yeah,
but it's just my own naivety. We've got to blame here. You know, it's not the film's fault. It's my fault.
We say naivety. I'm sure I've heard a lot of Americans say naivete, like they have like the accent on the end, and I've always thought that wasn't right. I always thought it's naivety. Surely,
nativity.
Nativity. No.
Right.
Nativity. I do want to quickly mention. So, if you watched listen to the review of The Void, we noticed we weren't massive fans of it. I do think maybe we were a little bit short with the story. I've got a link in the show notes. There's like an ending explained video of The Void, which I watched, and it kind of made me realize there's more going on than what I was giving it credit for. I still don't think it's a great film. I still think it's a little bit of a disappointment. But there's a little bit more happening here. Also, I watched Get Out and I fucking loved it. I thought it was a great film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So I don't think we'll review it, but I just want to put it out there. That
I think as of today, it is the highest grossing directorial debut with an original screenplay ever.
Yeah. You know what it is? The Get Out is not particularly... I don't know, not a particularly amazing film in terms of it doesn't push the boat in any way. It doesn't like redefine cinema, but it is incredibly competent and from a really unique point of view.
Yeah, it's quite bold, and I think it's pretty batshit crazy as well.
And it's pretty funny. There's quite a lot of bits where I was like,
it's definitely hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So this show is brought to you by the Story Studio Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to, in fact, go to www.theotherstories.net and you'll see all of our other podcasts there. Also, become a patron for early access to episodes, bonus content, and heaps of free stuff at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovach Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. And remember to hit subscribe. We got a review, actually. Let me quickly get... Oh, by the way, that film I was trying to think of, Sinister. You know...
Oh, yeah, I've not seen either of those. There's been two, haven't there?
Yeah.
I've not seen either of those, unfortunately. That is like my modern cinema hatred, films like that. I just avoid films like that any time, unfortunately.
Well, I feel like this, The Babadook, is a good version of that kind of filmmaking.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude. And cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.